American Log Homes and Cabins is assisting a developer in liquidating several of our kits that have deposits on them for only the balance owed. Most of these will save you more than half of the original cost. An example, our Augusta model, normally $42,450, is being sold for $16,500. Our Biloxi model, normally $36,825, is being sold for $14,500. This includes delivery, excluding California, Oregon, Washington, Arizona, Idaho, Alaska, and Hawaii, but we will pay partial shipping to those states. These kits have not been manufactured, and there's no time limit on delivery. This is a log home kit that includes complete blueprints from foundation details to roof, stack sheets, and a construction manual. Any do-it-yourselfer or builder can erect the logs. Kits do not include any part of roof, windows, or doors. Please call 704-602-3035 for availability. You can also visit our website at www.AmericanLogHomesAndCabins.com.
Off the ball, rugby.
Absolutely loves what he said. He said, we need to develop more X-Factor players in key positions. Like, that was his first entry into being the director of rugby.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
OTB's The Hurling Pod.
With Bord Gáis Energy.
Proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.
You seem slightly concerned by the amount of light there, Skell, is the first thing I've noticed.
Well, it's very close to my head.
Yeah, just a bit.
Not so much humour.
No, I'm grand.
No offence.
That's not taken.
A very good evening, Limerick, first of all. It's great to be back at Dolan's. We were here 2 years ago. Anyone here 2 years ago? Bollocks, that means some of the stories we're going to have to drop, at least for those people. Or if you could very politely just nod along for those parts, it'd be great. Anyone here who isn't a fan of the pod? Sweet. None of the stories are going over their head. This feels a lot like the live YouTube where you kind of throw things out there. You wait and see what happens in the live chat. But this time around, despite the lights, we can kind of see mostly. So it's fantastic that you're here. Of course, we're here with thanks to Bord Gáis Energy. They're the proud sponsors of the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship. End of the night, we're going to be giving away a couple of tickets to the quarterfinals this weekend. So if you can get an early train to go to Thurles, good news. You could win tickets here tonight. We're also going to be giving away some signed jerseys from the panels from Limerick and from Kilkenny. So we'll play a bit of a game at the end. We're also going to leave plenty of time for questions and answers. It's one thing we didn't do in the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre last time around, where they wanted to basically kick us out at the end of the show way over time. So this time we will plan it slightly better to leave 15-20 minutes to have a bit of a chat with you guys towards the end of it. We got some great guests lined up. 2004 Hurler of the Year, Sean O'Gahalpin, is standing by, ready to join us for what's going to be a great chat. We're also going to have one of your own in Leo O'Connor. Leo's two fans.
That was actually Leo himself there. Yeah. Man, Leo.
It's either Leo or Podge, it's one or the other. Podge Collins is here as well, 2013 All Ireland winner, Clare. There are obviously your St. Clare people here. Yeah. This is a really good way of gauging who has come in tonight. Yeah. Any Tipperary fans here?
Ooh. It's a shot.
That's obviously the Premier View pod over there. has Crack of the Ash made it here tonight by chance?
He won't say it.
Come on, stand up, you're here. Oof.
We have good working relationship with them and all, so there should be no fear here. Like.
He comes at me all the time.
The one other person we're trying to seek out, the person who's brought the fancy biscuits, are they here?
Oh, there you are.
Ah. Man. We'll get them for Skettle at halftime. Yeah, for anyone who doesn't know that, again, this is why you need to be a fan of the pod, probably to get one or two of these references. Skettle has got what biscuits are locked away you're not allowed to touch?
The club milk and the Cadbury's ones. You know, the eggs, or not the eggs, but the... What do you call them? I don't get them, so I can't remember the name, right? That's okay. She has since actually hid them on me.
Right.
Yeah.
Good news for Skell, a night off where he gets to actually enjoy them tonight, thanks to our listener for bringing them along. Yeah. It's going to be a great night. We're really looking forward to bringing all the guys up on stage, and we're going to take a look forward to the quarterfinals this coming weekend and chat about the championship. So keep your questions towards the end, because anyone who asks one, at least for the first 20 questions, we're going to give you a signed slitter from all the lads as well. So all that to look forward to. The furniture looks very nice. It's slightly different. We don't have the couches this time around. Mm-hmm. You do have a history in this city, Skell, of... destroying furniture, do you not?
Oh yeah, here it is.
Here we go.
Oh, that one. Oh, it's okay. Yeah.
No, that's the first part.
Look at that, boy. The pint is held.
Pint, like a spirit level. You just held it straight back up.
And notice how Will and Murph don't give me any hand at all.
Yeah. The damage is done at that.
You're just laughing. Joe Quaid, for that matter. Joe just kind of, you know, lets it happen.
Yeah, he hit me a kick, actually.
If anything, encouraged.
Hey.
I wouldn't mind, there's a bouncer that let me record that. And he was like, don't send this anywhere. I was like, that's absolutely fine. Off the ball straight away.
The only thing the bouncer brought to the party on that one, which I had to cut from the audio, unfortunately, is where he goes, tell you what, the boy didn't spill a fucking drop.
Yeah.
It's good practice, though.
It is. Yeah. But you are more destructive at furniture generally around here, aren't you?
When you're a student, right, you kind of have you have to do what you have to do to survive, right? So at the time, we were...
I suggest breaking things is not part of that, but go on.
No, but I explain. See, there's context to everything, Will, right? Right. So what happened was, Fitzy said to us, if we win the Fitzgibbon, he'll give us the house for free, right? And that's it. We won the Fitzgibbon, move into the house in February, grand spot, kind of, you know, February, it comes and goes, and there's no oil. Mm-hmm. So I said, how am I going to get heat? So I cut up the table and chairs. And I burned them. So... True story, I burned them. So
he obviously found out about this, did he?
So then it came time, May came, let's say college was finished, he walks into the kitchen and goes, where the fuck are the table and chairs like? And I said, geez, I don't know, David. I don't know what happened to him. But then Lex Canning was living with me, so he hung me straight out. So it cost me 300 euros, which would have been way cheaper if I just got the oil. But different, so yeah, that's the furniture in Limerick. So I have a bad history of it here.
I'm so confused as to why there's bad blood between you and David.
These better be, that's actually a good story. I won't count the next one just yet now. But keep you just hanging on that one now for the minute.
Murph, you're far too clean cut for all this, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, I think so, yeah.
Well, you do the dirt on everyone else. That's the worst part.
Yeah. I just watch when people make a show of themselves, really, and then just report it back. So I don't...
So I just watch.
But the other side is, it's like what you were saying about Canning. We were trying to come up with stories for Canning for the Boar Gosh. It's just not to be had. Now, I'm sure there are ones out there, but no...
I think the main issue was that Canning rang me about 2 hours before we went to Dublin, and he went, actually, I've got about 150 stories on Skells.
That's just the of it, yeah.
He said, just mention the Aran Islands. I'll tell you why he's banned from the Islands.
Yeah, I just don't care, you see.
I know you don't.
That's the trouble. Yeah. My national school principal always used to tell me, just think before you act. So I still...
You obviously live by
I don't take that. So your man's going to read in the proclamation again tonight, isn't he? It's in your back pocket.
Morning, yeah.
I was going to bring it for you.
Yeah.
He's on a presidential run, according to you.
Well, I think he is now, in fairness. If any follow Murph on Twitter, like, he's the cleanest guy going. And he's congratulating everyone. Anyone that participated in the European Championship.
Few people had good weeks, and I said congratulations during the week. And Skettle took exception to this.
Yeah, but it's nothing to do with you. Right? It's nothing to do with you.
Saying well done.
Straight in going, congratulations on...
A lad.
On the chess champion. Like, what? Like,
the chess champion, yeah.
So I think he's going for... I said before, after the proclamation, you're going for general. But you're looking at Michael D. Cushy number of two dogs.
Yeah. Do you have a list of people that you go to thank, or do you just kind of work your way through?
Just on social media, if something comes up and someone has done well, you say, a bit of positivity, goodwill. But like, you must have been like bet years ago or something that like any bit of positivity, you're like, oh, jeez, what's wrong with you? Like, you know,
it's probably a Galway thing.
Yeah. But no, jeez, I didn't think there was any harm. I'm now conscious of it now that I can't say well done to anybody
it's
anymore.
Not stop, yeah.
No.
I actually think he's a PR team sometimes.
Nah.
In fairness, some of your tweets are exceptional.
Like what?
The abuse you give me anyway.
That's easy though.
Actually, it's got so good now, I don't take you on anymore. I don't want that heat.
Well, it's no more than taking pictures of you upstairs. Like, you're just doing things, and again, it's just taking pictures at the right time and then wait till you open your mouth and then just hit you with it. So it's a very simple tactic, Skell.
I was just getting a look at the equipment up there. Shout out to your man doing the equipment. He told me he's 4 buttons to press, 500 euro for the night, well done. And your man comes in fucking... Ratty, like, you know what I mean? The only place I see is on Twitter.
Talk about timing. Tell us about when you got cut out needing to go for a shit then.
Oh, nowhere.
Is Michelle, you here? Yeah?
Nicely.
My sister's here. Is our mother here? Just you. Okay. Yeah, so my sister's here, right?
It's solid. It's fine.
Yeah, it's okay. So I can tell it, yeah. And this won't be shown, but so when we were at LIT, again, a Fitzy story, we used to run out in Cracknell. And it used to be like 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning. And my bowel movements, right, will be around 6:15, right? Okay,
so after the cows are finished.
After the cows are finished.
After the cows are finished.
So we were doing these 2K runs, you know what I mean? And so after the first or second one, I said, geez, I have got to go here. Like, and as you're in the middle of the woods, nowhere to go. So there was no toilet paper. So I said, Fitzy, I've got to go for shit. And he just tears off a piece of his notebook. And he goes, if you're not back in 2 minutes, we're doing an extra one, right? So I just jumped into the wood and then I got stage fright. And I couldn't get it out, and all I hear is 10, 9. I said, fuck, what are you saying? And all the lads are like, get up. So I said, okay, up the shorts. I got 100 yards, and I had to jump in again, and then down. And I said the piece of paper. So, yeah. I thought it was actually quite constructive.
Did he give you another 2 minutes when you stopped the second time?
No, because I was at the back of the queue anyway. Yeah, I actually took a bike off a lad who was just walking around. I took his bike and cycled up, dropped the bike, and then hopped in with the group again.
Right.
So I caught up.
Fair enough.
Some poor soul from Cratlow. Hope he found his bike.
What did you do with the sheet? Where is it now?
Oh, I recycled it, yeah.
Ah, very
Or some word edit, I don't know.
Considering your wife is minding the kids at the moment, I presume you can tell the story about how your first meeting with her links indirectly to another one of your managers in Gerlach Nan.
Yeah. I think on a personal level, Gerlach Nan's actually my favourite. He was like stone cracked, like, which I could relate to, do you know that kind of way?
Yeah.
But so the first night I met Grace, anyway, again, this is a different time now, right? So I'm 19. I'm just in the panel. I think I've met it, right? I go out the night before training. I only have 10 pints or so. I get home. Yeah, capacity, right? I get home. I'm training at 8 o'clock and at the night. I wake up. It's freaking 10 past 8. So I say, shit, I got to go get training. So I drove as fast as I could to training. I arrived at the night about 8:45. Thought I was so clever that I got out and I rubbed my hands off the tyre, you know? And I said, fuck, that'll definitely do it. So I rocked in anyway. Bear in mind, gel's still in the hair. Chain around my neck, and I said, sorry, George, fucking, she hasn't got her tyre back abroad, right? So I said, I had to fucking change it. Look. And he just goes, oh, yeah, show me the tyre. Actually, George, he goes, I know where you were. So I said, I had to admit that. So I blame Grace that one all the time.
Did he have scouts, or how do you know you're out?
He probably looked at the big red eyes of me.
That's a good way, right?
And put a half an hour late, and put just my hands dirty, nothing else, you know what I mean? But here's me thinking I was way smarter than Sherlock. Who'd won a couple of Ireland's already, so yeah, that didn't prove to be the case.
No. Like, Cody seems remarkably normal, Murph, by comparison here, because I'm sure we'll get Scale to tell the idea about the baseballs as opposed to slitters, the machines that he was using. Mm. Like, none of these kind of unusual methods were used. Cody seems bang normal by comparison.
Yeah, sure he was. Like, I mean, I think a lot of the stereotype of Cody was that people thought that he was a lot harder on us than he was. But like he actually encouraged us going off. Like, you know, if it was after games and you're after winning the game, or even if you needed to let off a bit of steam, he was actually very supportive of lads going off doing that. So I'm sure within those times, like, I mean, there was one, actually I didn't even think about this one, but like Brian, you know, away from the sideline was well capable of having a bit of crack and well capable of like putting a fella down as well, like if he wanted. Like there was a great one with Richie Hogan. 2009, Richie was kind of on and off the team. And he eventually, in the final in 2009, started. But I think he injured his knee and half-time or 10 minutes in the second half got actually taken off. But on the homecoming then, Richie was on the bus. Few drinks in him. Year was over, got a bit brazen and started saying to Brian, oh, Brian, you finally picked the right team at the end of the year. You finally picked the right team. And he was obviously taken off during the match, but he said, you finally picked the right team. And he said, I did, yeah, the fucking team that finished. He goes, Richie. And Richie was like, right, yeah, I'll just keep my mouth shut in future. Yeah. But, so, no, look, I mean, contrary to belief, I know a lot of people think that, like, often people would say to us after a game, what did Cody say to you or whatever? But a lot of the time it was, you know, he just put it back on us. But he also encouraged, you know, I'm sure a lot of the stories never got out, but just lads having a bit of fun, releasing a bit of steam and stuff. So there was nothing strange from that point of view, and probably very similar to E-Boys in Galway as well, but maybe not the same antics now, but you know.
Oh, you were far worse, I have to say. That's why you've got 100 Ireland's and I've won.
Over that.
All right, what was the thinking behind this baseball machine that came in then?
I think it was at a case that's probably... It's hard to know, because when he came in, right, we're probably in a bad place, you know? And Anthony that Dorfman said, you know, everyone would hang their hat on him because he just obviously come off the back of two at Ireland's win. So we said, well, if he says, you know, climb Crowpatrick five times in a row, we'd have done it. But in the brainstorm, he spent €12,000 on these baseball machines. And, you know, it was, you know, like, yeah, Galway are very rich, like, but at the time, money was going missing. So the baseball machines would have cost €2,000, right? And then some official pocket of 10, like, you know. That probably is the case, to be fair. But, whether which anyway, he brought in these machines and they were the different settings, you know. I don't know if you've ever seen them, the two wheels.
What, they like feed the baseball?
Put the ball in, here's boom.
Yeah.
So like, for example, now we're training one day in Pierce Stadium and Sean Tracy is there and he was with Clare obviously and he's on the 21 and he goes, right, James, tell me now when you're ready. So I said, like, just basically, yeah, whenever you're ready there, Sean. And he goes, James, the ball's gone past you. So this is no helmets time now, man.
Yeah,
there's no helmets time. So he had put the ball in, and it can go to 120 miles an hour. So it was a crazy machine. But then Jurlock got the idea, then let's put it in midfield, you know. Let's line up the whole squad. Let's fucking fire it up in the air, right? And then everyone catch it, you know. Because Galway lads couldn't catch the ball. Like, kidding, you know? So Eugene Clune was up anyway, first time. And we're all in a straight line, kind of semi-excited for this. And he drives it up in the clouds, you know what I mean? Like fucking hitting an airplane job. And then Eugene goes to catch it. And all he does is turn around with this. And he walks away that way. So everyone's like, this is backing up. I'm not next. So needless to say, that the basement machines are in some of the shed in Galway. Right. For sale, if anyone wants them.
Available for $2,000 now.
This $2,000, yeah.
Oh.
Didn't work. So, yeah.
Well, look, you got to innovate.
Yeah, but innovate has to be success, and we got nothing, so.
Yeah. We have Podge Collins with us. He missed an All-Star tour. He was telling us because he went off to play club football. But his Clare mates had quite a time on that trip to Shanghai, didn't they, Murph?
Yeah, well, it was a 2013 All-Star trip. But sure, obviously, they were off the back of it. They had quite a few on the team. Tony Kelly was young hurler and hurler of the year that year. But, you know, John Conlon, Colm Galvin, there was heaps of lads off it. But 2013, they were all young pups. And the hurling trip went to Shanghai. But they were a great crew. And the great thing about those trips is that they actually did mix you with lads from other counties that you mightn't have known. And sure, I got landed in with Cyril Donnellan. Actually, it was great crack now, in fairness. Like, I'd only associated Cyril Donnellan with absolutely, you know, cutting you up on a pitch.
Keep going, but grab a chair there for a second.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. As well. But I'd only ever associated Cyril Donnellan with absolutely chopping lads up on the field. But when we got out to Shanghai, maybe 3 or 4 days in, and had a few pints anyway, and we're out. Seth and Cyril were going back. Next thing, we're on the 13th floor. And the elevator arrives, door opens, and water just comes flooding into the elevator. Now, like, we kind of visions of, like, Godzilla and tsunamis in Japan or something. We're like, how are we on the 13th floor and there's water coming into the elevator? So we walked out anyway. We're like, Jesus, what's after happening here? And next thing we hear, these kind of, like, footprints, like, coming running down the hall. And, well, I name him.
Name him out.
Colm Galvin. Yeah. Comes running down and slides on his knees down the hallway on the carpet, like on a water slide. Now, he went for about 20 metres. And myself and Cyril Donham were like, jeez, he's after wrecking the place. We thought this was like, he was in Oasis or something after wrecking the hotel. What I actually figured out was one of the T.G. Catter journalists who was on the trip, a pipe had burst in his room. Nothing to do with him, pipe had burst, but had flooded the 13th floor as people were sleeping. And as people started coming back from the night out then, people were just coming out onto the 13th floor into water. So Colm Galvin was using it as a water slide. And we walked up to try and source of it. And I walked up, and here was like just a random collection of lads who had All-Stars that year standing in their jocks, amateur plumbers, who are now fixing this problem. So it's kind of case, I looked in, here was John Conlon over it after about 5 or 6 pints, John Milan, a heap of lads, and they're all going, no, what you want to do now is you want to get the ball cocked there now. I want to pull that. And Seth and Cyril Donovan were looking at this, and then we looked out the door and Colm Galvin goes sprinting by in his jocks. So we were just like, jeez, lads, if anybody got a video of this, you'd make millions. but that was, yeah, Podge actually missed that because he was playing football at the time. But like, it was, I know I've said it before, but those trips were brilliant for like lads just seeing a different side of lads out of an environment where like lads could actually just chill out and relax and stuff. But then I suppose they were my first impressions of that Clare team. So I know Shane O'Donnell and all these lads look like priests and everything, but they have the royal side as well.
Push on 5 years then, Skell, where you had a very particular plan against Clare in the semi-final replay.
Yeah, so it was 2018, and we had, if you remember, we played them in Croke Park on the first day of the semi-final. And that game went to extra time, and it was like 1:30 to 1:30, so it was a cracker of a game, in fairness, but it was, Micheál thought it was played at a certain pace, so he devised this plan and said we were playing far too slow, you know. So he said, what we're going to do now is we're going to start the game against Clare at a fucking 100 miles an hour. I want the ball back in play every 3-4 seconds straight away. So obviously, if the ball goes dead, I'm in control of it. I can get the ball out straight away, as fast as possible. So 25 minutes gone, we're 1-9 to 3 points up. This plan is working a treat, okay? Half-time comes, I get fucked by all the outfield lads. Will you slow down, please? You're killing us. You're killing us. And while Micheál is saying, speed it up, right? So we decided to go the same way. I took instruction from Micheál, mind you. And we went 100 miles an hour in the second half again. But on like 45 minutes, at this stage, I'm just going for a ball to poke it out. And Joe Cooney just pushes me. And takes the ball and drives into the crowd. Will you fucking slow down? So that went on for, that was like the 47 minutes, and we just eked it out by a point.
Oh, he's a wiser man, wasn't he?
He's a wiser man, but I didn't stop. I kept moving. But I can understand it was tough because at that time, Clare were, you know, they had Podge, David Reedy, Galvin's, Tony, John Connor was in for Ford. You know, Peter Duggan was lighter and faster. So they had an awful lot of quick lads. So if you remember that... That
Don't be looking at me now. Don't be looking at me.
I didn't. You started laughing first.
You that one.
I think you heard them. Family are sitting right there. No,
you know what I meant, right? Okay. But in that instance, right, they had more speed than us. Okay. And ultimately, they were kind of catching, gaining ground, and so we eked it out. 1 point. Thanks be to God.
Yeah. Next picture I want to throw up, if we have it ready. Paul Murphy can explain what it's all about.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. Here you go.
Oh, Jesus.
This was the one that we said we wouldn't show, but sure, here we are.
Yeah, you come to a live show, you support Focus Ireland, you get to see the picture. Go on.
Yeah. So this was after the Boer Gosh. This is the final show of the year last year. And we got kind of swept away. We went across to the Boar's Head, and we went across to another pub after that then. And there was people hanging around, and someone suggested, listen, we'll get you a lift across there. We're heading across to Coppers. All great ideas, finishing Coppers up in Dublin. So we walked out anyway, and lads said, oh, yeah, I have a taxi outside here. And I went, okay, we walked out the street. There was nothing on the street. I went, okay. And he goes, no, it's around the corner. It's a blue taxi. And I was, blue taxi? What's a blue taxi? So we came around the corner, and there was a paddy wagon waiting to duly drop us over to Coppers at the end of the night. And they said, listen, lads, no photos. And we said, oh, look, can we take one photo? And they were like, yeah, take it, but don't show it anywhere.
Yeah.
So here we are again. So now we have the bouncer and Dublin guards who are kind of saying, right, lesson learned. But it was very tight, particularly with you. Like, you were about...
They're rotten, in fairness. Like.
Oh, it was very tight.
There's no cushion in the seats.
They're not meant to be comfortable.
I know that.
I know they're not meant to be comfortable, but
still,
I expected...
Like, they're very uncomfortable.
You see
them
in films or something that they're bigger, like, but Jesus, they're tight now.
You were telling me that was your fifth time inside one.
Nah. He got over to it and he just opened it. He knew the latches and everything. He was like, yeah,
and he said, James, you're back again. Yeah.
And he was like, actually, if these yokes crashed them doors, oh, you knew a lot of it.
I was never arrested in my life. Hand in heart, I wasn't.
Charged or arrested?
In this country.
Arrested.
Right. Yeah.
Nothing ever stuck. Well, the best part was this all ended up coming around full circle a few weeks ago. So I was at the Europa League final, was waiting for friends outside the Aviva. Who taps me on the shoulder? The guard that gave the boys a lift. And he very quickly explained that he's tentatively related to Skell by marriage. Am I right in saying?
Yeah, I let the cat out of the bag there. I said I wouldn't name her, that I called her my sister-in-law.
Yeah.
That narrows it right down.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, my sister-in-law, Anya, her fella, Stephen.
You said her name. Yeah. But like I said this to you a few weeks ago, and we spoke about saying the story. I was like, all right, but keep it open. Like, you know, don't let it say... Yeah, no problem. My sister-in-law, I meant.
But I don't care, you see.
You've now narrowed a force of about 20,000 guards down to one person.
Yeah, but we're amongst friends here, like.
That's fine.
You're not going to say anything, sure.
Not like there's a camera right there.
Far too obvious. It was an A scale. Right. Will we bring on our first guest tonight? I think it is the right thing to do.
Yeah.
This man is a three-time All-Ireland winner. Breakthrough in 99, ends up marking just DJ Carey in his All-Ireland final. Takes on Henry Shefflin. Henry Shefflin admits, got the better of him 5 years later. Backs it up with Cork winning the title the season afterwards as well. All that after a terrible knee injury in 2001, where he was told it was going to be very difficult to hurl again, whatever about hurling at the same level he was at before that. Hurler of the Year in 2004, a man who gave, before we bring him out, this fantastic speech at Croke Park when he was All-Ireland winning captain. As Micheál Mór Shuaidhe once said, his father's from Fermanagh, his mum is from Fiji, neither are hurling stronghold. Let's bring out the great Sean O'Gohalpin.
I'm going to move there. Now.
Yeah, we'll move.
Hey, Sean.
Hey, Murph.
Real pal.
It's so nice to meet you, James. Well.
Sean. Down there, relax. Don't worry about having to tell any stories that are kind of questionably legal.
Yeah.
We'll be far nicer to the guests than we are to those two.
No.
How are you keeping?
Excellent, yeah. Great to be on the show. Usually the Cork people are doing the ambushing, but I feel like I'm being ambushed tonight here in County Limerick. Very hostile crowd there, but I'm sure they'll get the warmth to me after the 70 minutes. But no, great to be up here. I'm afraid to say, is it the home of hurling these days, is it? Could I...
Look at you, but, playing the crowd.
But there's another. Yeah.
That's your first time.
I want to get out of here alive, so I have to see all the nice things. Sure. Look, there's another five counties that might have a say about that. But sure, look, we'll Feicimead is so good.
We'll talk about your career. Do you want to start with that with Limerick at the moment? Like this team, are they the best you've seen? Do they need to get to five in a row to get that title? 6 months already.
I would have thought that I wouldn't have
witness another better team than Paul Murphy's, you know, 2006 to 2010, 11 Kilkenny team. And then, I mean, Limerick have just come within a flash and they're on the verge of creating five in a row and they look odds on to do it. I still play in my head. I'd love to see that matchup if it could be done. Do you know what I mean? But like, obviously it can't be done. Because on paper, they equally match up the same. But look, whether or not Limerick win the five in a row, they don't have to prove that they're not a great team. They're a phenomenal team. And they've just got used to winning, you know, ugly, winning nice. You play it whatever way you want to play it. They'll serve it up to you and they'll give it back to you in spades. And so when I take my Cork cap off, I just admire, you know, I just admire at their achievements, their humility, do you know what I mean, as a group. And then this time, a couple of times this year, like I've really seen Limerick kind of, unlike a couple of years ago, where they're pummeled to the ropes and they're still able to do the alley rope-a-dope and eco the victory. And they'll need it before the year is out, you know. I have no doubt there'll be more twists and turns, you know. And then Limerick know that. So, like, they know the other five teams, they're not going to hand the All-Ireland to them, you know. But it'll be great to see how it plays out. Talk about Limerick. My first debut with Cork back in, Jesus God, 1996. That sounds like long, long time ago. Usually when someone refers to the 2000s, you know, maybe not bad, but when someone says, look, I met you back in 90, no, you didn't. Definitely not. No, but 1996, I come on in the second half and Limerick hammered Cork that year by 16 points. And then, like, that was my introduction to inter-county senior hurling. And then you grew up as a child in Cork, dreaming that you're going to be guaranteed to win a few All-Irelands. And then, bang, reality hits you. Not alone that, but bang, Frankie Carroll gives you a couple in the ribs. And he's smiling at you. And his white gum shield is just clearly vivid. And I'm down, just gasping for air. And then you soon realise, Jesus, this is the major leagues here. And look, after humble beginnings, then, sure, Three years later, we get to win the All Ireland. It's funny. Like the current Limerick side, great, but that Limerick team in the mid 90s, they were awesome too. Mm. Jesus, awesome. But just very, very unlucky not to win, you know, either 94 or 96. But they were an awesome team, like, you know, kind of. And it's funny when you're young and when you're making your debut, couple of years previous to that, when you're a young teenager, you're used to looking at these guys playing and they become heroes of yours, like, you know. And then all of a sudden, like, that's all forgotten about because, like, they're ruthless, like, you know. But not alone that Limerick team, but other inter-county players. I mean, like, you mentioned DJ Carey, like, so around that time, I was always given the short straw, American DJ, because Jimmy Barry Murphy had this idea. He thought that I could run. he'd be able to run along with DJ, kind of not knowing, like, that I was a Clydesdale and he was he was a top stallion, like, you know what I mean? Out of Coonmore or Ballydoy, like, you know? So when you're marking these guys initially, like, you're just short of, geez, can I have your autograph there, please, before we get on to the series of the game. But great grounding, great learning, great development, you know, playing against, like, all those great players from that era, you know. And
don't remind Paul Murphy the fact he was on the last team that had beaten Limerick in the championship in a knockout game, because he will remind you if you don't.
That was, I never bring that up.
Still, some people sore about this, probably in the room here.
Because only for it to be after winning six, is it?
They'd be heading for six.
Yeah.
No, heading
God,
for seven.
Can I?
Seven, yeah.
They'd be heading for seven, wouldn't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
Fair play to that very reasonable Limerick fan who just heckled out there.
You're very good, yeah.
Playing for your heroes, though. I remember you were with Joe in studio last year. You told a lovely story about your dad still having that connection from home in Sydney. He put on the All-Ireland football in the finals. You'd listen. And Jimmy Barry Murphy's one of those guys that seems to always be in possession. And then you come over here at 11 years of age. You end up playing under a minor.
Yeah.
And he ends up in the senior manager that details you on DJ Carey in your first All-Ireland final in 99.
Yeah. It's bizarre how your life pans out without you planning it. My dream growing up, I grew up in Sydney, in the western suburbs of Sydney, Australia, till I was 10 years of age. So up to then, my future was a Canary Bulldog player. I was going to win premierships with the Bulldogs. That was it. Play cricket during the summer, listen to Kylie Minogue and Jason Donovan, and then that was, and then maybe if I hit the big time, that I would have made probably Home and Away in the series of Home and Away. And then my dad comes home one evening and he says, "We're going to Ireland." And like back then, like Ireland to me might as well have been between Mars and Jupiter. Didn't think it existed. Dad used to talk about certain events back home. I didn't believe him. Because I didn't see it, I didn't see it with my eyes, living in Australia on a regular basis. But back to the point I made when I was talking to Joe last year, there was one event growing up in Sydney that maybe changed my mind that, probably such a place does exist, and maybe that is not bullshitting. So early in September, myself and my brother, Dale, who's a year younger than me, we'd be woken up at 12:30 in Sydney. Sat down in the living room, radio on, Dad would have his cans of Foster's drinking, and we'd be listening to, we didn't know what was going on, but it was the All-Ireland hurling final, and then football in 3 weeks later. And two names jumped out. Back that time, Jimmy Barry was one, and then Jack O'Shea was the other one. And as you said, it's just bizarre that my next connection with Jimmy Barry Murphy up to then, which was over the world, was like I end up in the dressing room playing with him at minor level. And then after that, he drafts myself, Jordan, Dermot Sullivan from the minors onto the senior panel, and Don Logue onto the senior panel. But Jimmy's a unique guy, kind of iconic guy. Jesus, man. One of the Cork Living Greats, but sometimes there, playing on the Jimmy, Jesus, it had its own kind of, not pressures, but like, it would take hours after the game for us, the bus, to leave Turles, because you'd be waiting for Jimmy to get on the bus, and after the game, Jesus, it was everyone in Grand Central Station felt like, they had to meet Jimmy, talk to Jimmy and all that, and you'd be on the bus and say, "For fuck's sake, come on, let's get home." Can I? And then 2 hours later, Jimmy will just jump on the bus and, "Okay, let's go." And different style of management. I worked under same manager like Don O'Grady, who would have been hands-on coach. Jimmy wasn't the hands-on coach. I think his forte was, he had a good rapport with players. When you were going really bad, his language was excellent. He'd tell you the greatest thing since sliced pan. When things were going bad, when you were flying it, he said enough to keep you grounded. And then that's the way he operated. And then his last parting words before you'd leave the dressing room, he says, "Best of luck today. I know you won't leave a stone."
That's enough.
And so even if a manager said that to you, but if it came out of his words, Jesus Christ, you take the hinges off the door, and he was just a well-liked guy. We all had to get our start from somebody somewhere. He gave me my first start where another manager mightn't have looked at me the same way, And then, like, I, 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 like, I know over the years I wasn't plain sailing. I remember my brother telling me Clare beat us in the 1998 Munster semi-final, and then this was the year that we were supposed to make the breakthrough. We had beaten Clare in the league.
Yep.
I'll say it quietly, but we beat Limerick in the first round here. Can I just pretend you didn't hear that? So the Cork machine was humming, and we were going up the Turles, and we were putting a stop to the Clare machine under Jarlock Nan. And did such thing happen? It did not. They absolutely beat us to Banagher, okay? They beat us back to Banagher. So my brother was telling, like, he had heard from certain people that were sitting next to him saying, for fuck's sake, is that where Cork are at? No, they're even fucking playing guys from the Philippines now. Do you know, kind of... Not funny when the brother related to me. Funny, no, but not kind of... And they couldn't even get my mum's country.
I was going to say, we're like, fuck's I'm sake. From Fiji.
Like, if they had said Fiji, I would have said, yeah, I give him a pass, like, but I'd imagine all of this would have been fed back to, do you know what I mean? The management, and that same day, Jesus, I just wish the groan had swallowed me up, like, you know, I was on James O'Connor first, and Jesus Christ, he fucking tore me up, and then next, I was half flat chasing after him, and next they switch him and PJ O'Connell fingers, who was just as quick as and fit as James O'Connor, and then he gives me the run around, and I just wanted to get out of there, like, you know. But Jimmy would have stuck with players, you know, through thick and thin, and then a lot of the players around then would be very appreciative of Jimmy, like, you know, kind of couldn't have asked for a best first manager, you know.
Do you mind me asking just on that? Just as you were saying there earlier, like, I think we all kind of had our moment of when you kind of, you've made it onto the team, or you maybe had a moment where you were so far from the team, eventually when you got onto it, you kind of went, geez, I'm actually here now, like, this is real. And, like, the reason I say it now, it's not diplomacy, but you were in one of those moments for me where, like, I was dropped from Kilkenny twice, and then eventually when I kind of made it, I had three moments, really. I had one, I marked John Milan in the semi-final, and I went, geez, this is real, like, you know, you're marking Milan here, like, you know, and... Mm-hmm. Another one, I said it to Brendan Cummins a few years later. I was competing on a puck out with Owen Kelly, and Cummins was pucking it down. I was like, I know we're rivals, but it was like, that was a huge moment. But like, for us, for me growing up, and I'd say the same for Skell, for 15-year-olds now, looking at the game, the dynamic duo that are wing-backs is Dermot Burns and Kyle Hayes. Like, whether you're from Kilkenny or you're Limerick or you're Cork, or God, it doesn't matter. They all look at them. But when we were 15, there was two sets. There was Tommy and JJ, and there was you and John Gardner. And we played them in 2011, 2012 in the league, and that was one of the moments for me where I was on Patrick Horgan and I looked down the far side and it was you and John Gardner, and I went, holy shit, like, this is real, like, you know. So, like, was there a moment for you where, I know you're after naming like James O'Connor and those ads, but you obviously had your road to getting onto the Cork team. Was there a moment where you went, yeah, this is real, this is, you know, we're doing this now?
I'd say it was, so my second year, 97, it was against Clare, because, like, that Clare team, they were awesome at the time. So in 97, we played Clare in the championship up here in the Gaelic grounds, and it was... So I was, again, tasked of marking. I used to get all the quick fellas for some strange reason. I know what.
We run too fast,
I know what. They were like, were they punching equations? And then they'd say...
You were the only lad with a six-pack at the time.
The tallest guy weighing nearly 100 kgs. He goes on the lighter, smaller, quicker fella. So, but it was marking Jamesy that day. And... I remember I got an early block on Jamesy, like, which was like, it was a career boosting kind of block for me, but it was the confidence that, you know, he's human.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, so guys that you would have saw before, you mentioned John Milan, that you would have, do you know what I mean, kind of, you know, like, you would have pictured them as great before, but you kind of realised, you know what, they have two arms, two legs, one head, they're human. And then once you know that you can compete and you have the confidence that you can compete and survive, that was the moment for me, Paul. in 97, albeit there was more to do, but at that stage you knew there was no turning back.
Yeah.
You know, like that.
And you knew you belonged.
Exactly. And I suppose that's another thing you mentioned. So you spend first couple of years trying to get your confidence, and the next couple of years when you get into the team on a regular basis, it's trying to sink everything in where it's motionless. So I went through the middle of my career where I wasn't even thinking about stuff. It just came more naturally, you know. Kind of, but you have to go through, unfortunately, the groundwork, and then there's a bit of pain going through it, and then there's a bit of like looking foolish and then looking embarrassingly bad.
Yeah.
I mean, one of my first league stars, it was up in Nolan Park, American DJ Carey. I was bagging nerves. First ball, one of the few balls I got, I threw it up and I hit a fresh airy. Like, no, like, how embarrassing is that? A senior at the county player hitting a fresh airy. Can I,
it's pretty embarrassing, Sean.
Thanks, James. Yeah. I know the truth hurts, but like, can I... I keep on reminding Alan Brown. Alan Brown hit a fresh year in '99 All-Ireland final as well. So I said, look, Brownie, you're in good company. You're not the only fella that's hit a fresh year. So it's about putting on the foundation to get through your next stage in career where everything is just sinking in lovely. You're not looking behind your back whether you have time or not, because you're just know there's an innate thing behind that, like you've time, and then that period is very bliss. Oh, it's very bliss, and then you have the decline, which is horrific. Where your mind convinces you still have it, but like physically you're just...
Don't worry, Sean, I'll get kicked in when I was about 12.
Was
so.
It?
I had to accept it a lot earlier than you did. You inadvertently, you've probably made Skell's night, and I will get back to it in a second, but all evening you were going, I wonder what weight Sean Og was when he was at his peak. You were wondering earlier. He just inadvertently told you there.
Yeah.
What were you?
You said 100 kilos.
Jesus Christ.
100 kilos, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But I had to...
There you go.
Yeah.
Not 100 kilos there.
So I had a guess there on Sean Og, and I said, you were probably... 88, 90 kilos there.
I'd say 93, 94.
For you.
But there was, there was a stage I went up to 100 kg. And it's funny, like in the early years, like kind of before the game got a bit scientific.
Yeah.
Kind of, you just ate all around you, like, you know, like after, with dinner, I used to have 5 slices of bread, butter, like with dinner, like back, like it was point of milk.
Yeah. Dinner, like, kinda, no, we can talk all night about this now. My father, my sister will tell you, he used to give us a pound of liver.
Pound of liver?
Liver.
Yeah, yeah, I used to like liver with fried liver. Yeah.
Yeah, like who gives? Does anyone feed their kids liver here?
Yeah.
Where do you even get it? You know. But you eat all around you. Everything. Liver, rabbit, everything.
Yeah. And then, Jesus. Okay, don't know about rabbit, no. Hopefully not Joe Rabbit, no. But, and then kind of... So after a few years when there was more expert people coming in to setups, you know, and, you know, taking your body fat, and they were like, sit down and... go through your daily, you know, what are you eating? And then it was at that stage where...
This is your heart, maybe when you're in the middle of coming back as well.
Yeah, so you mentioned, so the great Gerard Hartman there is with me from Limerick.
Yeah.
I don't know whether people know Gerard Hartman's background, but he's...
Paul's worked with him, Usain Bolt has worked with him.
Yeah. Two great.
Onyo Sullivan's worked with him. All the greats.
So he was a former triathlete.
Mm.
He was a former triathlete for Ireland. He was in America. I think he was cycling, ran over an armadillo. had a bad accident, broke his hip, and he was told that he couldn't compete at the highest level again. He started going into sports injuries.
Right.
And made a great career. And as you mentioned, you have GAA players, Olympians, you name it, would have come up to Limerick when he had a practice up in O'Connell Street. So I spent the year with Gerard trying to get my patella tendon rehab.
That sounded like the nastiest injury of all time. So you're in a car crash around Thurles, were you?
Yeah.
The kneecap basically comes off.
Correct. I know. It's grand. I don't have to rush after these events, but I remember that same day I was doing an event for Guinness. Guinness used to sponsor the hurling championship back then. So I was up in Dublin. Total fucking culty. And this is back 2001, missed time, the Dublin traffic, got caught, and I'm rushing back down for training that evening to get onto Parky Kiva at 7 o'clock because we're getting ready to play Limerick in the championship that Sunday. So I do a few foolish things on the way down, got away with it, but didn't get away with so I was involved in a head-on collision. My first vivid memory is just seeing a big lump coming up halfway my chinos, not knowing what it is, thought it was swollen.
Yeah.
And just picture that. Just say we're driving this way, I'm facing the other way after the impact. You know, it's like the car is going back up to Dublin again, and I'm in total shock at this stage, and the pain is just excruciating. And it was later when I was brought to Nina Hospital, the doctor told me, he says, that's your kneecap. It's blown halfway up your leg. So the lower chamber, the tendon had snapped. In all my naivety, so I get operated the day after. I'm transferred from Nina Hospital down to CUH in Cork. So the day later after the operation, in my naivety, I asked the surgeon, I'll be all right for Sunday though, will I? And
you get 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Keep it 20 minutes, see how it
goes.
Stand in the goal, sure.
Yeah. And to be fair to him, he didn't want to put a stake through my heart. He says, no, you won't make this game. And I says, what about if they win? Because back then it was a knockout for someone. If we win, he says, no, you'd struggle to make the next game if they... And I says, will I play it all this year? And he says, no, but in fairness... he knows a great hospital, Paris. He says, the Cork team doctor, Dr. Khan, is outside... He'll talk to you. Fuck the hell. Yeah. And he sprints out thinking, this fella's a fucking lunatic. It's not a normal hospital. This fella should be, it should be in the fucking kind of St. Dan's in Cork. Anyway, so the doc comes in and he just lays it out on the table as blunt. You're just clasping for faith or hope and he says, look, not many people will come. He says, not many people will come. But he says, I know you will. And those words were just enough for me to drive on that winter. And I spent a year rehabbing.
Yeah.
2002, I come back playing, but I'm absolutely red raw useless. Just can't get into the tune of the pace of the championship. It's like I want to be there, but I just can't be at the break, or I just can't get near my guy to avoid separation, you know, because of my back I'm marking. And I just go through a horrendous year of frustration in 2002 playing, but it starts to come good again in 2003 then, you know, and then that's where it takes over for the next couple of years then. And, you know,
it's like legitimately, as much as Dr. Khan is reassuring you, that could have been the end of your career, couldn't it?
I'd say that someone did tell me Brian Mullins did have a similar kind of back in the 80s, and he got back playing. But there was no doubt in my mind that I was I needed to get back. I wanted to get back. And I'm sure Paul and James, do you know what I mean, kind of would have been over their careers at a stage where, you know, kind of...
Murph's robust. He'd one injury in his whole career.
What did he?
Murph?
I know.
That's a sign of a good career. By keeping,
I knew what he was doing.
No, but there was surely a moment, though, as well, with that, where, like, I mean, that's a fair journey to go to, from, like, kneecap being up in your thigh to going to be hurler of the year 3 years later. Like, I mean, I do remember... There's it's like a circus after lads winning All-Ireland. But like after my first one, I remember a moment where you're away from the crowd and you may be in the hotel room in the City West just before the circus kicks off, and you kind of have a moment where you're like, jeez, that journey, wherever I came from, of being dropped, of being whatever, I'm here now. Like, you know, and there's nothing coming back. There's no one rewinding this. You're an All-Ireland winner now. But for you, like, there surely must have been a moment whether after, you know, You won Hurler of the Year, you won All-Irelands, where you kind of took stock of that. It might have been back in Cork, it might have been somewhere else, where you kind of went, you could have stopped there. Like, you know, it could have been over, but the journey, and then being Hurler of the Year, you know?
Point.
Bag big deals on even bigger brands at TK Maxx. We're talking women's wear wins, with holiday essentials from sleek swimwear to luxe linen and designer sunnies, all under $34.99. Head in store today to fill your suitcase with fresh summer savings. After all, everyone knows there's no deal like a TK Maxx deal.
Great point, Paul. Sorry. You're often here like that, oh yeah, kind of such a promising career, but... And something deep inside, I didn't want myself to be added onto that list. You know, kind of... And a lot of people, and it's a good way, and it's a credit that if people mention, do you know, he injured his knee and they don't remember it, like, you know, kind of, which is a good sign for me, because if I hadn't have come back, you'd be always remembered as, oh yeah, kind of promising career, but it ended up in a bad car crash. So it's like that part of my, you know, life is forgotten about, and which is pleasing for me, that, you know, people don't know much about the car accident. But good memories coming up to Limerick, you know, working with Jer, kind of, he's a funny man, kind of, his connections were clear, so he'd always dig it into me, like, you know, kind of...
Don't be back for the Clare game.
Isn't it part of a player's playing career, you know, kind of, I mean... You always compare a career like a roller coaster, you know, kind of, it's never going to be in a straight line. If it was in a straight line, you want your money back, you know, if you, and then, yeah, like that was definitely a low, you know, in my career, but it's all worth it then when Paul says, when you have that 20 seconds in the dressing room, that's all you get. Yeah. 20 seconds, you sit down, and you look at the team in next year and you don't even say anything because you're just exhausted from the efforts, and you'll just nod away, and then that's it. And then 20 seconds, and then it's the madness begins, the demean begins. But like, it's that 20 seconds is golden in your life.
There's a kind of an unspoken thing, I think, with that as well, where it's like everybody kind of knows, like the last time or the next time, you probably will never have that group of players in a dressing room again. So like literally, and the thing is that you walk off the field in All-Ireland and there's people dragging you to try and do interviews and stuff, which is great. It's all part of it. But you walk into the dressing room and you know outside, it's all absolutely going crazy outside. You know, the media is going mad. There's people on the streets. There's everything. But that group of players that maybe people wrote off at the start of the year, maybe they had them as favourites, whatever. You've now won the All-Ireland, but you're in a dressing room, and as soon as you all walk out the doors, okay, you'll have your banquet afterwards and so on, but that's the last time you're going to be together, because invariably, lads won't come back in January, lads might be dropped, lads will pick up injuries, and you just know that's part of it, but it's definitely an unspoken thing in a dressing room where you're kind of going that, yeah, this is what I've been fighting for. It's a very short-lived, like
Did you find as you got more successful, like you started attacking them on, that the hysteria kind of subsided a bit?
There would be.
Nearly like you got used to it and said, oh, this is another year.
It always changes, I think, with teams whereby, like, let's say when you came along and let's say you won your first All-Ireland of that group of players you were with, you were flavour of the month and people were delighted, and there was a new team on the scene and people were delighted for you. Same as Limerick 2018. But like, the sentiment, it doesn't, I'm not saying anything that people don't know, the sentiment changes over the few years. So if a team wins an All-Ireland in a given year, 5 years later, if they win in the All-Ireland for a third time, for a fifth time, whatever it is, that sentiment will have changed. And that's just something the teams have to deal with, you know? And that's nothing new. That's across every single sport. So it's definitely a thing that, you know, when you win your first one, if you're a new team up and coming, it's lots of things about it are easy because everybody is giving you the pat on the back. But then dealing with the tag of favourites, or then dealing with people then getting on your back and saying, well, the only reason you're winning is because you don't play football in Kilkenny. I'm sure Limerick fans are sick of hearing, you know, Dublin are winning because this. Donegal were winning back in 2012 because X, Y, and Z.
All Ireland like, junior football winner Paul Murphy, by the way.
Thank you. Fucking. Going 40 minutes in and you don't even bring it up. We've mentioned Jimmy Barry Murphy, like, I mean, but no, there certainly is. And like, but I think the thing is that any team who wins in All-Ireland, they don't really care what's going on outside the dressing room. Like, I was speaking to Podge earlier, and like, Podge, he said a really good point that any time a team was going really well that he was part of, nothing ever escaped the dressing room. So Anthony spoke about never escaped the dressing room. A team was named on Friday night. If there was changes or if it was a dummy team, it never made it until you saw the team on the field on Sunday. Yeah. That was always an indication for me. And I think that also reflected then that, you know, if people are saying about these Limerick lads at the moment, like nothing affects them from outside the dressing room, and likewise nothing gets out of the dressing room. And like, I've always noticed that teams then that I was part of that maybe weren't winning, that wasn't there. Maybe there was stuff getting out of the dressing room, and that comes down to individuals as well. But there's lots of things that go with being part of a winning team that after the fact you look back and you go, oh God, that was a great indicator that we were going well. But in the moment, it sometimes it's hard to even
can you feel it too? I found you can feel it, but can I explain it?
No.
Can I explain what's going on, but you can just feel we're on a good run here. You
know? Yeah. Again, I think it goes back to the unspoken thing. There's a few things that you can't put your finger on that, you know, you don't know why, but you just know you're going to play well. And it's like what you're saying with Jimmy Barry Murphy, like when he goes out and say, I know you won't let us down. Yeah. Explain what that means to you. You can't explain it. It's something you experience on the field. So there's.
Can I ask you a question? So obviously the way you got injured was quite traumatic, right?
Yeah.
Borderline life-threatening. So how did that impact you psychologically? Because it took you, by the sound of it, 12 to 18 months to get yourself, just first of all, get yourself healthy, but then get back to the standard you were previously. Mm-hmm. What kind of roller coaster was that for you?
So where they hit me badly was you become separated from the team because you're doing your own rehab away from the team. The team are training, you know, and then you're looking from the outside in. Previous couple of years, you would have been part of that, you know, you would have been privy to all events going on. Now you're on the outside, and then it's like, and I don't, like, people don't intentionally kind of try to treat you, but like the fact that you're no good to them, you might as well be in Timbuktu, do you know what I mean? Because you're not healthy, you're not fit. How are you going to help, you know, to set up? So that is hard to adjust, you know, ego-wise, mentally-wise, that is hard to adjust because basically what you call it, it wasn't long ago that you were, you were in the thick of it. You were wanted, you were loved, you know, kind of, and then I remember the Cork physio, Declan O'Sullivan at the time, he says, look, he says, if it's going to be, it's up to you. It's, no one else is going to do this for you. So you just have to stop sobering and then just get on with it and then go do your rehab and what you call it. But he says, just visualize when you're doing a rehab that you're going to be playing in front of 40,000 in Turles or in Croke Park again. And then I just claps onto those words and then just use it whenever you were doing like leg curls or, you know, hamstrings or box jumps, that you were just after a box jump, you were just pretending like that you were in the middle of Semple Stadium, pucking the ball, like catching the ball. And then all of that helps you. But like, but you're right, James, are you going to dark place, you know, and like, would you be depressed? Absolutely. Yep. You probably wouldn't say it at the time, you know what I mean? It would have been terrible, but like, you are depressed as hell, like, you know. You see it in your everyday interactions with people, because you're not playing with Cork regularly, you know, kind of, they're not having the same conversations maybe as they would have had with you before, like, you know.
Do you find that, because I remember, I think Don Logue's Twitter handle used to be, I am a hurler.
Yeah.
So when you're looking at, let's say, if you use that time, that was your identity. First and foremost, a hurler. So when you take that away, it's like taking your whole personality, your life, your routine, your cycle, all stripped off you like that.
Like that, yeah. And that becomes part of the bigger conversation with retired hurlers, you know, like where do they go when that entity is gone and what do they do? And they're, thankfully, when you're injured, you fill up that void by doing rehab, you know, and you get a structure where you're rehabbing every day and you work your, do you know what I mean, your daily life around it. And it's like any rehab treatment. There's some weeks where you think you're ready to play tomorrow, and then there's other weeks then you feel like, oh, geez, I don't think I'm going to come back from this. Like, you know, kind of, yeah. And you just experience like the emotional high and down. But in the end of the day, it's just having that belief that, and you just trust the people that's working with you, like Joe Hartman, that they've got people, he's got, you know, athletes back from major injuries, mm-hmm. and you trust that he's got given talent, do you know what I mean, that he will get you kind of right. And thankfully, that happened for me, do you know.
Can I ask you, where did your passion for hurling come from? Because you can feel the passion coming through now at the moment. Like you mentioned earlier, 10, 11 years of age, coming into Cork,
yeah.
having not seen the game, having not played the game before. These boys were steeped in it from a very young age, particularly with Paul and Kilkenny. You're almost born with a hurling in your hand. Like, what brought that love for you? I mean, you obviously played Gaelic football to an incredibly high level, got to an All-Ireland final, won a league as well. But for hurling particularly, where you have to be an early starter, what brought the passion for the game for you?
Probably two places. One event and one place. The local J Club. When I joined the Pearshig on the north side of Cork City. I know there's in the Pearshig here in Limerick as well. But so I joined the Pearshig 1988. Literally was just given a hurley. Mm. The only thing that I held resembling something like that was a cricket bat, you know, a couple of months before that in Australia. So off I went practicing. And it was the underage coaches. And funny enough, like a lot of those underage coaches that I would have had, some are still alive, some have passed on. But they just had a love and a passion for the game that just rubbed off on kids like me. And like, they'd bus you to Parky Keeve, even on league games, Turles during the summer. Like, people go to Spain willy-nilly now, you know, on holidays. My holidays was Cork playing Munster finally. That was my holiday. Like, and if I got that, nothing else mattered or cared. I was happy kid. That was my summer mate. And if you beat Tip along the way, that was kinda, that made it extra special as well. Beating Tip along
the scale will definitely agree with that.
And around that time, the Cork footballers and hurlers were doing very well. Mm. And they won the double in 1990. And as a 13-year-old kid, like, that had a huge, profound impact on me. And it's where, you know, you hear of schoolboy's dreams. That's where my schoolboy dream started to try and represent Cork at some stage, because you see the excitement and the joy that it brings to the people. And like at that stage, the Lee McCarthy and Sam Maguire, I didn't know the history or the significance that much of it. But after a year or two, you soon get to know the importance that it has on Cork people, but Irish people as well, you know, kind of. And So that was it, my local club and Cork winning the double in 1990. And still to this day, when I meet past Cork players from then, like, I get chills, you know, kind of. They wouldn't have a clue the influence they would have had on me, but I still, you know, kind of, Larry Tompkins there, you know, kind of, you come across Larry every now and then. Tony Sullivan, who's from my own club. I meet Tony quite regularly, but like every time I meet Tony, like
Baby Jesus' nickname, as I recall.
Baby Jesus' nickname, yeah. Tony was, he was an exceptional talent in the 80s and 90s, yeah, and like kind of. He was so good he could walk on water.
Like I assume if you're walking around the North Mon, we had Tomás Mackay on the show weeks ago as well. He was talking about just like the heritage that he had of, say, some of the Cork hurlers when he was growing up. Similarly, you're walking through the halls of that school. I presume you're looking at all these All-Ireland winners and great players.
Correct. So that's another place, the North Monastery. So I went to the North Monastery for 6 years. Yeah, I played Harty Cup for 3 years. You're reminded of the tradition and the history of the school. You're reminded of the players that would have represented Cork, you know, after playing with the man. And you're reminded, like, that they produced six All-Ireland captains, you know. So all of that has a very positive influence on you. There is pressure as well. I think, like, Paul is on about, you know, pressure. There is pressure when you're playing with like old traditional establishments, do you know what I mean, that have used to success. But I think what you try and do is you try and block out the previous history, and you try and create your own current history with that. And another thing as well, playing with the North Mon, did like you get to play against the cream of Kilkenny players when you're playing St. Kieran's. So back then we would have played St. Kieran's in challenge games. You're playing up against the top schools in Munster. At that stage, like you're 16, 17, and you're marking a tip into county minor, and like you're testing yourself, you're gearing yourself against, you know what I mean, kind of that quality. Same when I was playing Harty Cup, it was Sexton Street, Limerick CBS. They were the top hurling school, kind of art school. Reach is kind of taking over that mantle now. Flannan's a clear, you know, kind of, and then in Cork, then you would have had very strong hurling schools as well. So when you add all of them and bind them up together, that gives you great education platform, you know, to excel and to get better. And like as well at the school, I would have had Donal O'Grady as a Cork senior coach, but I knew him from first year because he was a teacher in the school. So back then, Donal O'Grady used to be a pundit on the Sunday game back then. So it was around the late 80s, early 90s. And Jesus, the man, the abuse he used to get from the opposition, go back to the Sunday game. You know nothing about the game. And then Grady was like Teflon. He'd take all this abuse by and he'd just brush it off. But working with quality class coaches like that, was only but good for your, you know, hurling career and development. And I find myself doing a bit of work with the school now. I'm not a teacher at the school, but there's myself and another guy, Gary Gray. We come in, we give of our own spare time, you know, help coaching the school. And and it's still a humbling experience when you go through the gates of the school, you know, kind of, and up to the old man field. And
you're getting enjoyment from that, teaching the skills and passing them on.
I absolutely do. If they can listen to me more often, they'll be doing better. But they all want to be. I mean, they're looking at the inter-county games, and it's great that they are. But they tend to forget that you need to execute the basics, you know, kind of at times there. And they're forgetting, like, that the inter-county guys, you know what I mean, they have 20 years of, you know, consistent practice behind them, where they just do it, you know, in their ease. And these guys are trying to start off, like, I mean, they're 15, 16, 17 year olds. And I get a great kick out of it, and it just keeps my interest still in the game, you know.
Two more questions before we go to the break. Yeah. First one, how long did you work on that lovely speech that we played earlier on? Oh, yeah. I know you've said before you would love to have got a bit of Ratimi into it and maybe brought that side of your heritage, but beautiful Irish, lovely speech. I'm guessing you were writing that for a while, were you?
So I did have a hand in it, but the guy that must take credit for that speech is a Christian brother that taught me in the mind, Brother Bo Zhang. He's no longer alive. So when we beat Clare in the semi-finals that year in 2005, 2 days later, I went up to the brother's house up in the school. So I did all my secondary group through Irish. So I just knocked on the door, brought her, kind of saw Corsi, Sean Hogan. So yeah, Sean Hogan, kind of saw her too. Big craving here, and I chalked, there's an All-Ireland final coming. There's a 50-50 chance that we might win. Can you help me write the speech if we do win? And he says, yeah, gone five a bit. So it was him that came up with his father and Trussie or Fiji Gokurki, because as good as my Irish is, it wouldn't be as snast as the way he put it. So it was Brawer, and still to this day, if someone said what was the most proudest thing that you, it was saying a speech all in Irish. Mm. And I know we've had captains, you know, over the years, like Joe Connolly of Galway did a smashing one in 1980, beautiful, like the Connacht Irish is, oh. Paddy O'Shea did one in 85. Pat Flory, someone taught me.
He was an Irish teacher here in Limerick. So
yeah, so Pat Flory, when he captained off in 85, I didn't know that until recently. He's a mainstay commentator on TG Carr for the, and Darrow Kinnear then, the Kerry footballer. But I had done my 6 years in secondary school in Irish. What greater day than the All-Ireland Hurling Final, do you know what I mean? I mean, it is one of probably the biggest cultural days of the year. There was no question about it. I had to do it. And then, like, still to this day, people that wouldn't have much Irish, but they'll still come up and they'll do their best to say a cup of fuckle because of that. So glad to have done it and glad to have got the opportunity to captain Cork that year.
My last question is a very stupid one, but why not finish on a bad one? They can ask much better ones when you come back later on. We kind of referenced some of the legends of the game that you marked, DJ, Henry Sheffin in the final.
Oh, yeah.
You spent time in Dan Shanahan in the final.
Yeah.
You probably, Milan would have drifted around you as well. Who was the hardest opponent to come up against?
Can I say all of them, no? I would have said DJ Carey for a good number of years.
Okay.
But Henry Shefflin has to be Henry.
What's the challenge about Henry then?
Okay. And I mean this in the nicest way, Paul, but Henry Shefflin was a pretty face and a pit bull. Yeah. Am I describing that perfectly?
Yeah.
Like, Grant, he'll engage, do niceties, but fuck me, lad. Excuse my French, but if there was a baller, he was vicious, lad. Mm. Like, unbelievable competitor. And any way you wanted to play it, he played. Physically, he loved to engage himself physically, you know, on an opponent. Kind of many nightmares I've had, like, of Sheffield getting the ball in his arm, he's ramming it past your chest, do you know what I mean? As if he's going past, running into space, but he's really giving you a message, like, you know, kind of, he's ghosting by play, like, it's just mastery. Kind of, like, you'll be marking him, and then ball will be the other side, and then he drift that way, and you're saying, like you said, sure, he's grand, leave him off there, and then you're fixated on the ball, and then all of a sudden there's one, two, And then next, Henry's gone the other side of the pitch, and you're like a langer then, like, kind of. And then, Jesus, who's on that fella? Kind of, who's that chefing? And then, like, you're running, like, it's too late when you're running after, like, kind of. The longevity of his career, the big match days, he just turns up, you know, as all of, you know, players, like players, Paul, that on the team that you play with, like, but yeah, he was his.
Did you relish coming up against him as well? He was very nice about you in your Lyrica Gael. He said you got the better of him that day, and it was a big part of the All Ireland final.
Yeah, I think that was one sort of 55 battles. I guess I kind of, jeez. And funny when it was a rivalry for about 2 years, right, between us and Kilkenny, kind of, because after that it didn't become a rivalry. They just hammered us out of sight, like, you know, kind of, and then the old team, like, we were at a stage where it's like the Euros, no, if Azerbaijan were in their Munster Championship, they would have beaten us, like, you know, kind of. But when it was a rivalry, like, you would have to, like, I would honestly say it was because of, like, sort of the Kilkenny players and Henry Shefflin that made you go back that winter to, like, train harder, be better, and you were just, like, tunnel vision fixated, because if you didn't, you know, it would fucking eat you without salt. And it was because of that. And I remember Agassi talks about Pete Sampras, that Pete Sampras beat him, but he says only, even though Pete beat him in, you know, a lot of the tennis games, he says Pete, unbeknownst to him, brought his game up twofold. And that's what the Kilkenny team and players like Henry Shefflin, you know, would have done with us, you know, kind of, it forced us to kind of, so, like, if it was 20 push-ups, you were doing 30, just the fucking, like, I'm ready that next summer, I'm ready, and then, mind you, well, this wasn't, like, you weren't even guaranteed to win, it was just, like, try to survive, you know, kind of, that's how great they were, like, they were a phenomenal team, but at the time, it's a question that's often asked, do you really hate him? Do you really hate him? I says, no. I hated losing to him, but I never hated him. Do you know, kind of, mind you, I'd say some of my former teammates might have a different attitude, you know, or...
I think I'm wrong about it, yeah.
Answer to that. But it's funny, like, kind of, like, 12 years on, you know, when I just think back to that time, and I just look at the Kilkenny teams at the moment, I just look at them in awe and inspiration. Like, and then when I train teams, that's my template. You know, kind of, not the plumas, Paul here. I'm saying too much, Paul won't even fit out the door here. Like, kinda, but that is the, such as the highest. I just love the way they go about their hurling. They don't complain. They just get on with it. They take their flakes. They give their flakes. They just get on with it. If they're good enough to win, which is most of the time, yeah, they'll shake your hand and they'll move on. And what you call it? And like, they're always okay.
That's a respectful rivalry, but sounds
absolutely, yeah. Jesus, and I say all that with the greatest respect, and I suppose the biggest compliment I will always give Kilkenny around that time is when you play other counties around then, they might have an off day, you know, and you could be having an off day yourself, but the other teams might have an off day, and they'll give you a chance or two to win the game or get into the game. Many times that you wished that these guys would come with an off day, they never did. They never have an off day. They're like the Roman Empire. They just Roman army. They just come in. They just
pilfer all around them, and they just leave a trail of blaze, like, and then off they go to the next village, like, you know. So
we'll see how much destruction Paul Murphy can do during the break. He owes you a few minerals for being so nice about the Kenny team. We're going to take a short break now. Got about 15 minutes for you guys to take a break. Sean O's going to sign some slitters for us as well. Of course, you're here in Limerick, in Dolans. This is our first roadshow of the year with the Hurling Pod. It is brought to you by Bord Gáis Energy. They're the proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship. Also, by being here and picking up your tickets, and I know there's a bit of resale where people also made donations, you're also helping out our chosen charity for tonight, who are Focus Ireland as well. Can we put our hands together for the great Sean O'Gahalpy? Thank you, sir. Gentlemen.
OTB's The Hurling Pod.
With Bord Gáis Energy.
Proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.
Lucky, lucky, lucky. At Hyundai, we're lucky that we can provide you with options when going electric. With back-to-back winners of World Car of the Year in 2022 and 2023, IONIQ 5 and IONIQ 6, alongside the award-winning Kona, our trained EV advisors can guide you to start your electric journey. Learn about our battery longevity and dramatic cost savings by speaking with us today. Test drive our award-winning electric family range and see more at Hyundai.ie.